You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
I'm Brad Jackson.
And here we are for, Halloween Part 2, because we, never enough spooky shit, this time of year. So,
We were kind of late in October, so, Halloween is my favorite time of year, so, I'm okay with it being,
Yeah, that shit can go year-round.
I do like a good Thanksgiving, but, now, if we could spookify Thanksgiving...
Zombie turkeys.
That might be something.
So, since we're also doing a two for Halloween, we're going to have a two for cigar. What are you smoking this week, Brad?
Well, this week I am smoking the Monte by Monte Cristo. And I don't smoke too many Monte Cristos. This one... Yes, it is, but also a great cigar maker as well. But this here is a throwback to a classic, and, since our topic is Halloween, the new release, which is also a throwback to a classic, I kind of felt like it went hand in hand.
Sure.
So the cigar that I'm smoking is going to... sport a Dominican Olor and vintage Nicaraguan binder with Ecuadorian Habano wrapper and aged Dominican filler. Most notable notes right now are espresso, spice, and that's what I'm getting. So this should, come in at almost a full flavor, full body.
And since I'm smoking something different because I was too lazy to go get a coordinate cigars, and went to a GTO event on Friday. Had a leftover cigar. I'm smoking the GTO Don Emilio Edición Limitada, which is a Figurado-style cigar, which is kind of weird. I don't smoke a whole lot of Figurados. It's like a kind of like a double torpedo on each end. But this one was...
See, that's when you can't, have a good buzz going and try to smoke, because you'll inevitably end up smoking the wrong end.
Yeah, which end do I light? Yeah, this one was made by GTO Cigars, Dr. Oscar, to commemorate his father, Don Emilio, in his life and dedication to the, art of cigars. And it's kind of weird, because it's a Dominican wrapper filler binder, throughout, but then... the foot and the head of the cigar has a U.S. Connecticut broadleaf on the head and the foot. So there's that kind of beginning and end of the cigar kind of mixes up the flavor a little bit with that additional leaf at either end. But it's definitely supposed to be a full bodied cigar with they say hints of cayenne, rich coffee, cocoa, and a woody, creamy cedar undertone, and I'm definitely picking up some pepper here at the start. And you know me, I like a good peppery cigar. So
yeah, I don't know. It's just something, and when you talk about the spice of a cigar, it's kind of interesting because sometimes it's sharp, it's bitey like a cayenne, or other times it can be mellow like a ground black pepper or something, and it's always interesting because spice can mean a lot of things.
Yeah, some jalapenos, some habaneros, what, there's a whole range of spicy. And speaking of the Halloween movie and Michael Myers, if you're a serial killer and need to get through the night chasing teenagers, nothing keeps you going like some Strike Force Energy. StrikeForceEnergy.com. Use your promo code Cigar Nerds for 20% off your order. Or if you're having to, one of these teenagers is having to run from a slasher.
See,
throw a couple.
I was going
to
make that comment. should we be associating, this is how, if you're a serial killer, to keep going. Most people would want to escape or be able to confront or, you know, protect themselves.
But, you know, Michael, Jason, they all have that, like, you can't keep them down. You run them over, you shoot them, you stab them, they get right back up and keep going. That's some Strike Force energy right there.
Do you want to lose a sponsorship? Because this is how you lose a sponsorship.
Oh.
Actually, this is probably how you gain additional sponsorships. Keep going. Tell the nice folks where they can find Strike Force Energy.
StrikeForceEnergy.com. Promo code Cigar Nerds. Kill, 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 kill. Oh, wait, that's Jason, not Michael. So with that, we'll be right back. And welcome to the Smoke Show. I don't know where I was going with that, but
I don't know either.
Yeah.
I almost missed the cue to bring us back on air, too, so that was kind of exciting. That's what was going through my mind. Man, did I hit the button in time?
So, way back in the day, I believe we did do a Michael Myers episode at one point, if I remember correctly. Because I remember talking extensively about the Busta Rhymes Halloween episode.
Yeah, I mean, you know... I'm sorry, you know, no, I'm not sorry, actually. You know, I mean, all right, the original Halloween came out in 1978. I don't think there's a year that goes by that I don't end up rewatching it.
Yeah, because that's one of those classics, and it's like, you know, John Carpenter. I mean, he was like this, you know, legendary filmmaker, and well, still is, but it's, you know, a lot of your low-budget horror movies are kind of made by guys that, you know, not hugely well-known, or they became hugely well-known because of their horror creations. And, you know, Michael Myers is kind of credited with, like, the creation of the slasher genre. You know, so, like, Friday the 13th came out, what, 1980 maybe? So, I mean, this is like the...
I mean, it really set the stage. Yeah, and, like the... I mean, you know, if you look at the, you know, I think, Jason, you know, much more, you know, than like a Freddy Krueger or somebody, but, you know, Jason carries a lot of the same, you know, traits minus being very aquatic, you know, of yeah. Michael Myers. I mean, you know, there's not a lot of speaking. There's just this menacing, unstoppable force of nature.
And that's the thing, too. If you look at, you know, the first Friday the 13th, Jason's not in it. It's all, you know, Mrs. Voorhees doing all the killing. So it's like, I wonder if they're like, oh, this Michael Myers guy, kind of badass. Like, and so when they changed for the remainder of the Friday the 13th, they kind of stole a little bit of Michael's thunder there.
But I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, you know, just the iconic, you know, jumpsuit, white mask. Like, you know, it just... A character, I mean, you know, you can recognize it, you know, it's probably one of the most recognizable creations, you know, for it to be so simple.
And to take a Captain Kirk mask and paint it white to make it that much creepier. Because, I mean, like I said, this was, you know, it's gone on to be huge, but, you know, back in the day, this was, you know, a cheap-ass independent film that it has, you know, stood the test. I mean, like I said, the original... Halloween is kind of one of those that, like, it's a classic. You always go back to it. And in the age of, because we are talking about the 2018 Halloween, the new one, in the age of reboots and remakes, it's kind of cool that we're kind of going back to the source material and doing a true sequel. Because, you know, there's been, I think this would have been this is the 11th installment of Halloween.
Yeah,
but,
I mean,
they were like, all this other bullshit that came after the original, doesn't count. Like, we're retconning everything. This is a direct sequel to... Because John Carpenter, he only directed the first one. He co-wrote the first and the second one, but you know, the original was the only one he directed and really had nothing to do with Halloween after the second one. So, like, since he's come back as not only the composer, because that, you know, the iconic Halloween music, you know, John Carpenter did that. So not only is he back as the composer, he's also the, I guess, story advisor and executive producer. So, you know, it's kind of, you know, back in the hands of the original, you know, at least being touched by the original master. So it's kind of cool that they, you know, they're like, yeah, everything I didn't have anything to do with doesn't exist.
Which, I mean, is kind of a great facelift, you know, because, you know, the second one sort of followed the story arc. All right. You know, the third one was, it's not my favorite, you know, because it has nothing to do with, you know, Michael Myers or anything, but it's a very artistic and very different creation of its own.
Yeah.
And then you had, you know, the H2Os. Of course, you had Rob Zombie do, you know, his take on, you know, the Halloween franchise and stuff. And
which, you know, as much as I hate reboots, the Rob Zombie two Halloween movies were actually, you know, really good. I enjoyed them. And they were kind of like the first two original Halloweens, where the second one takes place right at as the first one is ending. It's like a true sequel. Like, if you put them back to back, it's one continuous story. It's not like we're coming back 2 years later. It's like, no, we're 5 minutes later. Like, you know, he's in a coroner's van going to the morgue and like, oh, not really dead.
I feel like we've seen that before.
Yeah.
So, you know, all right. So out with the old, in with the new. We're going to fast forward 40 years where, you know, it's really awesome, you know, to see Jamie Lee Curtis reprise, you know, the role. And
yeah, not only Jamie Lee Curtis, but, you know, what's his name? Nick Castle, the original, yes. Michael Myers. You know, of course, the man's in his 60s now, so he's not able to do a lot of the action stuff. But, you know, at least a few of the times when it's just kind of Michael standing around looking creepy, it's the original Michael in that suit. I mean, the new version is played by, you know, stuntman James Courtney. But, yeah, it's kind of cool. They not only got Jamie back, they got the OG Mike back, too.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, of course, you know, John Carpenter, you know, as the composer, executive producer, creative consultant, like we talked about, I mean, and, you know, that's one of the things about this franchise is, you know, that iconic score, you know, and...
Just that freaking weird piano.
I mean, I just love the fact that they made the, you know, the whole score, you know, available for a digital download and everything, because, I mean, it is just a great spooky track, you know, I mean, but they gave it a modern facelift, which was, you know, kind of interesting.
Yeah, and yeah, you know, the new blood around this time, it's being directed by David Gordon Green and written by Green, Jeff Fredley, and Danny McBride, of all people. I mean, Danny McBride, you know, whatever, Eastbound and Down, Tropic Thunder. This is a guy who's like known for just balls out comedy stuff. And this movie, you know, it has its funny moments, but it's very dark and, you know, scary. It's not one of these horror comedy movies that we have been getting recently.
No, I mean, this was a throwback to the iconic, you know, so yeah, psychotic, you know, thriller. I mean, you know,
it's just so weird that Danny McBride of all people is so one of the writers of
this. I guess
thing.
At this point, you know, spoiler alerts as we, you know, dive deeper into the film. Is that fair?
Yeah. And also, you know, I mean, it's still in theaters as we're recording this. Made for $10 million, it's already made $229 million. I mean, it's broken several box office records. And not
I
only,
mean, though...
This is like the...
Dude, you throw Jamie Lee Curtis at the top of, you know, the Halloween. You bring back, you know, Nick Castle, you know... And then, you know, throw in there that, oh, yeah, we've got John Carpenter's, you know, involvement. I mean... If nothing else, you know, this was almost a trip down nostalgia road, and I think that's one of the reasons why I enjoyed the film so much. People that, you know, are not as into the original Halloween, I've seen mixed reviews, you know, from folks, and it's like, well, you know, you really weren't a fan of the, you know, the first one, so, I mean, are you, you know, we're unfamiliar with it, so, you know, you're not coming into the film with the same, you know, kind of mentality that somebody like me that's a horror movie buff and loves this shit is going to. So
yeah, and it's kind of I know one of the things that's kind of cool about it too is that we made fun of it a lot the last Halloween that we saw, where it was kind of making fun of the whole reality TV genre, where this one kind of, to modernize things, starts off with a podcast. Because, like, the true crime podcasts are huge, like Serial and whatever, To Make a Murder, and all these, like, you know, true crime podcasts are really big nowadays. And,
you know, and that was...
That was kind of cool. I'm like, sweet.
So, you know...
Movie about a podcaster.
Yeah, but we also saw that in Tusk and, you know, several other films. So here's the deal.
It ends
we,
badly in both times.
We can't go to Canada and we can't go to Haddonfield.
Yeah.
Okay. We just got to, you know, avoid those places. But, you know, that was a crazy thing. Like, you know, as they're showing the mental institution, right? And they're panning across, like, the screens and the equipment. Dude, that stuff looks like it's still straight out of the 70s. But then, you know, they break out a freaking Zoom, you know, modern handheld recorder. And, you know, the technology difference there, the onomatopoeia, was just something that kind of jumped out at me that was like, huh.
Yeah, kind of like the movie itself. It's kind of still in that, you know, 70s slasher genre, but, you know, it's modern times. But, yeah, I mean, this, of course, like I said, starts off with, like I said, since... anything except for the first movie has not occurred. Yeah, Michael has been in the place he's at, but he's basically been in a criminal mental hospital since 1978, since the, you know, first murders. So it's been, you know, 40 years of him in prison, and these true crime podcasters are able to get an interview, you know, with Michael, and, you know, they meet his current doc, you know, in the original movie was Dr. Loomis, but, you know, the actor who played Dr. Loomis has long since passed away, so it's kind of his student, Dr. Sartain, which sounds kind of demonic. It's just like Dr. Satan, who has been studying Michael for all these years, you know.
But I thought it was a awesome nod, you know, just, you know, a former student of, you know, Dr. Loomis, you know, because, I mean, his role, you know, Loomis's role in the first film, I mean, is so much, you know.
And they even have, like, later on when they're, you know, after they leave the hospital and they're at their hotel room kind of going over their notes and doing some editing and stuff, they're playing tapes from, like, supposed interviews with Dr. Loomis, so, you know, some of his notes and stuff they'd recorded, so... So it was kind of cool that, you know, bringing him, and even Jamie Lee Curtis was a kind of a joke too. Cause like when she first meets, you know, like, so we're kind of jumping ahead and we'll kind of catch up here in a minute. But when she meets, Dr. Sartain, she's like, oh, you're the new Loomis, which I kind of thought that was just kind of an amusing, amusing joke.
Well, I mean, that's always, you know. That was one thing on this film that I thought was rather interesting, you know, is, you know, they want to always do a deeper dive into the inner workings of the mind and everything else of, you know, somebody who, you know, for all intent and purposes is driven by one thing and one thing only, and, you know... Yeah, what's there to dive into?
Because even, you know, back in the day, Dr. Loomis made that point that, like, no, he's just evil. There's no motivations. There's nothing to understand. This is someone who was born pure evil. And, you know, they even say that, like, Michael's not – he has the ability to speak, but he has never spoken the whole time he's been in this institute. I've never gotten any information out of them. I mean, y'all are welcome to try, and you know, I'm kind of curious to see if they'll even speak to you. And that whole, like, I guess, exercise yard at the psych ward was creepy as shit.
Like, they just got their boxes, and yeah, you know, it's like
they're chained up in these little squares, and there's all these other dudes, and so
I was just, you know, that was kind of an interesting thing to just see. You know, Michael Myers, no mask or anything. Now, they still didn't really show the face. They just, you know, did a couple of, you know, side shots, but,
you still have no idea what he looked. He's just the mask.
You know, but, I mean, just standing there, you know, no response, no nothing until they pull out, you know, the mask from the evidence locker from the Attorney General's office. It's like, that shit's going to happen. Like, yeah, you know, when dogs start freaking out, everybody else starts freaking out. Like,
yeah, because, like, Michael, the most reaction you get him, he kind of slightly turns his head. But all the other people that are in the exercise yard, like, all the other crazies just start, like, you know, it's like almost like the mask gives off some kind of energy. Because, like, and that guy's, like, you know, trying to, you know, antagonize him into giving a reaction. He's like, you feel it, don't you? You know, you want it. And, you know, and he's just kind of like, whatever, asshole. But, like, all the other crazies are, like, he's losing, like, their shit.
He's like, you know, I'm taking that, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, for me, I think I follow, you know, Hawkins, you know, mentality when it comes to Michael Myers.
He's like, oh, no. Like, yeah, because, you know, later on you meet Deputy Hawkins, who played by Will Patton, who's been in a lot of cool ass movies, but he's supposed to be the officer from the original movie who arrested Michael. And he's like, yeah, I stopped Loomis from killing him 40 years ago. I'm not making that mistake again. We find this fucker, we're killing him. He's like, wish a motherfucker. Speaking of wishing a motherfucker would, like, once we, like, get up to talking about Jamie Lee Curtis, she's gone full Sarah Connor.
But I've got some reserves on that regard. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's it, you know, that's kind of the thing, you know, from, you know, seeing the progression of the traumatic events. And, you know, it was kind of crazy because I almost have the same mentality as the freaking high school kid, you know, who's standing, you know, out on the corner. And it's like, you know, let's put this in perspective. What happened in Hattiesburg, or, you know, Haddonfield, was bad. You know, 5 people got murdered. But, you know, compare that to all the other atrocities and bad shit, and it's like, you know, is it really that bad?
Like, yeah, because, you know, Jamie Lee Curtis, you know, had a daughter who now has her own daughter, and we're kind of following her granddaughter, who, you know, Jamie Lee Curtis lost custody of her daughter because everybody thought she was, like, crazy or whatnot, so she kind of, you know, grew up, you know, they still have some contact, but it's very, like, contentious. They really don't want to deal with each other. But yeah, like I said, when her friend, her, you know, her granddaughter doesn't have, like, the resentment for her that her own, that her daughter does, so she's like, I want grandma to come to my, like, award ceremony or whatever. Yeah, and they're having that conversation with her friends, and it's like, in this day and age of terrorist attacks and mass shootings, is 5 people getting killed in the 70s that big a deal? Like, it's like, why are people still freaking out about this shit? Because, like I said, since this, they've ignored all the other movies, you know, Mike doesn't have that big of a body count anymore.
Yeah. Like,
they're like, is he that really that scary? Like, you know, it's like, it's this next generation don't you know, get what the big guy can do.
But yeah, I mean, I definitely, you know, I had, you know, similar sentiments, you know, just of, but I mean, at the same time, like, I don't know. I mean, I feel like,
that was like,
you know, he has, you know, larger than life strength and stamina and everything, you know, demonic possession. Absolutely.
Or just really motivated. No, that was the thing too, is like, I didn't realize it because it's, you know, part of the legend of Michael Myers. He's always supposed to have been Laurie's brother. But apparently what I didn't remember was that detail wasn't introduced into the second movie.
Yes.
So at one point, when the kid's like, it needs to be your like grandmother's like your uncle or something. She's like, nah, that's just fake news. That's some shit people like made up. He's like, you know, not my grandmother's brother or whatever. So it's like, they even kind of bring that up. It's like, nah, it's bullshit. He's just some crazy fucker. We're not sure how he's connected to us, but for some reason he wants to kill my grandma.
Because he was trying to here's how it went down, right? He makes a pass. She rejects him. You know, keep in mind, this is 40 years ago, you know. And, you know, he takes it, you know, it just devastates him. You know, he's doing this out of resentment and broken heart.
Yeah. But before the shit hits the wall, you know, our doomed podcasters go to get the other side of the story and go visit.
Hey, you think we could get more interviews if we start, you know, offering like $3,000?
Yeah. They're like, real investigative reporters don't pay for their interviews. And they're like, we got $3,000. And she's like, that'll buy some ammo. Sure, come on in. And, you know, so they go to see what she's done. And you know, at first, she is like, looks like someone who's very, you know, who's been through a traumatic experience. She's kind of walled herself off from the world. I mean, her house is like, a, you know, at least the first time we see it, you know, big fence around it. There's cameras everywhere. There's big spotlights on the roof and stuff. And she's got like a big ass metal door. And like I said, they have to bribe their way in before she.
Hey, your old house had a big ass metal. I had flashbacks of that. I'm like, I feel like I've been in that basement before.
Dude, when like I saw like the rest of her house, I was like, I want this house. If I win the lottery, this is like how my house will be built. You know, and when they go to interview her, she's like, yeah. Talks to him briefly, but they're like, well, you know, it's been all this time. Will you please, like, just go try to talk to him so we can kind of get some answers on why he did this? And she's like, he did this because he's fucking crazy. Get the fuck out of my house. But then you see that, like, you know, yes, she is, like, PTSD and a little bit. That's one thing that's, like, because from the trailers, you see her being a badass and, like, shooting guns and preparing for war. But once you actually see the movie, she has a lot more vulnerability to it. Like she doesn't kind of like you see her like when she finds out that Mike, because they tell her that Mike's getting transferred, and she goes to the hospital to watch him come out of prison to get on the bus.
Smith's Grove, right?
Yeah, Smith's Grove. And she's like drinking and got a gun in her because she's like fully planned. Like I'm gonna kill his ass. This is like my first opportunity, and she just kind of like. Houndnut has a panic attack, just starts screaming in her car and just can't go through killing him. And she eventually, she's supposed to meet her family for dinner. And she shows up drunk and hysterical and stuff. Like, I couldn't kill him. I couldn't do it. You know, and she's, and like I said, they just kind of have to call her a cab and, you know, console her and whatnot. Cause she's like really having this
well, at
broke
least the
down
granddaughter.
Moment.
You know, the, you know.
And the mom's like, see what I told you? She's a crazy bitch. She's like, yeah. She's like, you know, I never told you about how I grew up. Like, I learned to shoot when I was 8. You know, I learned, you know, martial arts when I was 10. And then at 12, you know, the state took me because they, I was being raised like a freaking warrior. And my mom was like batshit crazy. So, like,
which is kind of crazy because, I mean, we'll get into it later on. Because, I mean, you know, definitely it's, you know, they're trying to separate themselves, you know, from that, you know. So you get, you know, hey, you know. I was raised around guns and shit, so now I'm all anti-gun, anti-violence, you know.
Yeah, the daughter is very much like, you know, she's...
I think she's a little bit more of a realist and, you know, has a little bit better...
Yeah, she really thinks that, like, her mom was crazy. That, like, there's, like, Michael Myers is not going to come back, you know. I was raised this almost, like, mentally abused because she's been trying to, like, prepare me for this. Yeah, you know, so she's like, you know, it's still her mom, but she's still got like a lot of resentment of how she didn't really get a decent childhood because like she was trained like a bad kind of like if you remember T2, like when you first meet, you know, young John Connor, he's like, you know, my mom taught me to shoot and fight and all this other stuff because like the Terminators are coming, and eventually I got put in foster care because she got locked up in a mental asylum trying to blow up Skynet or whatever, and it kind of had that, you know. Parallel,
same vibe too, yes.
Yeah, and you know, and she's like trying to be all super normal and whatnot, and played by Judy Greer, who's been in a lot of things, and she's you know, playing, you know, Karen and her daughter, Allison, played by Andy Matichek or whatever. But of course, shit goes wrong. Of course, you know, Michael's bus crashes and all the crazies escape, and the dude and his son, like, hunting, runs across the wrecked van. And the dad's
I just love the conversation leading up to that, right? So the camera pans in. They're in a vehicle. And, you know, the son's like, Dad, you know, I enjoy hunting and stuff, but can we do that on the weekends? Because dance is really my passion. I want to dance. And
I don't want to be – I don't want to kill that. And then they run into all that, and the dad's like, stay in the car. I'll be right back. And as we know from horror movies, if you say you'll be right back, you're not coming back. And sure enough, the kid calls, like, 911 and gets out and grabs his, like, hunting rifle and starts, like, where you at, Dad? Goes on the bus, and, like, poor Dr. Sartan pops up, and he's like, hey, can I shoot something? He's like, shit!
Time to go.
Yeah, and tries to get back in the car and take off. And, of course, you know, that's what they do. It's like, you know, Michael, you know, first time I've seen him, like, kill a kid, because, you know, normally he's, like, you know, all about killing the babysitters and the parents or whatnot, but he usually lets the younger kids go, but this he's
well,
like...
Well, I mean, and we saw a lot of that, you know, where, you know, the kids are out trick-or-treating, and a couple of them actually bump into him, and, you know, he's just like, you know, not paying any mind, because he's focused on...
Yeah, it's like...
His objective.
Gotta go kill the teenagers and the parents. Move along, kid. I'll kill you in a couple years. Oh, but yeah, the whole sequence of him getting his gear back, too, because you see the, you know, the podcasters, and they're like, they go to visit the grave of Judith, the girl he supposedly first killed before he escaped the first time and went after Lori. And, you know, there's like some creepy dude in a white hospital gown over in the corner, and then kind of disappears, and then they end up at the gas station, and, you know, you see some dude like walk across the parking lot real quick, and the girl goes in, you know, clerk is there, you know, she gets the keys to the bathroom and goes to the bathroom, and then homeboy comes in to like pay for the gas, and the dude's like face is smashed on the counter, and he looks into the garage, there's like, it's like an old school gas station with the garage next door, and there's like some dude in his underwear dead, and it's like, oh shit, Mikey's got his jumpsuit. And sure enough, he's like in the bathroom, like, that's so creepy as shit, where she's like in the bathroom and he comes up and like rattles the door and she's like, occupied. And he just like reaches over and drops the teeth.
Yeah, that was pretty iconic, you know. I mean, that was probably, you know, one of the, and I mean, I don't know about you. I mean, you know, we both carry, it's a well-known fact. But I think that's one of the reasons why when I do carry, it's still within arm's reach, because that's when you're your most vulnerable.
Oh, yeah. that's why I always go to, like, the handicap stalls, because they got that that's usually where the diaper changing station is. So I can just lay my gun on the diaper changing station or on top of the toilet paper rack just in case. You know, you don't poop unarmed.
You caught me with my pants down. Literally.
And that's one thing we talked about, you know, that even though he's unmasked, they never really show his face. And even in that scene, you see his feet and his shadow. And when you know, her friend comes in and tries to like defend her, the fight's most his face is mostly in the shadow. So you never really see what he looks like.
I mean, it's just the jumpsuit and the black boots, man. Yeah. And then the big hands coming over the stall.
Yeah. So like, you know, when he's fighting with that guy, you know, he's kind of like backlit, so you don't really see his face. And after he finally, you know, kills both of them and goes out to the car and like pops the trunk, and you see him find the mask. And then like, as soon as he like, you know, puts it on and like stands up from behind the trunk, you finally see him like in all his, you know, Captain Kirk glory. And you're like, fuck yeah, it's Mikey's time.
But this one also introduced, you know, quite a bit. So, you know, I mean, here you are. I mean, I don't know how many miles the gas station is from, you know, the original, you know, spot where, you know, he attacked the bus driver and, you know, they all escaped.
Well, he stole that kid's car, too, when he killed
him. Well, that's the thing, is a lot of times...
How do you find those fuckers?
Like, you know, you never actually see him, you know, he's just walking. And people are like, man, you could outrun him or whatever, but... You know, this goes to show, like, you know, and we'll find out later on, like, No, he's capable of driving and, you know, yeah, operating machinery and,
not,
you know.
He's not Jason, he's who's not kind of like, you know.
Just a, you know.
Yeah, undead monster. You know, this guy's, no, he's a dude. He like I said, he has the ability to talk. He just chooses not to. He can drive and whatnot and operate, you know. Doesn't know how to shoot a gun, but he can operate some blades and machinery and whatnot.
I guess when you're, you know, that big and everything, though, I mean, you're going to overpower most everybody. I mean.
Oh, but, and I like, you know, of course, the first officer on scene at the bus crash who finds the doctor is, you know, Hawkins. And, but of course, you know, the doctor's like, you know, at completely out. They're like, well, we found the manifest. One of these fuckers was Michael Myers, but we have no idea what happened. And, you know, they kind of go into town trying to like track, because they're like, we don't want to panic everybody. It's Halloween. Let's try to search low-key.
Let's not have a 40-year, you know, occurrence of what happened, you know.
But that whole thing is him when he gets to town is just like, don't see Lori. Let me just kill some random teenagers. And just that, and like his, I saw some stuff talking about the guy who the new guy playing Michael. And he's like, yeah, I kind of base his movement, like, I thought of cats and how they hunt silently and how they just kind of like, you know, I mean, he's like a freaking ninja. Cause he walks in that house and he's like, got a hammer and like, you know, whacks that first lady. They're like, ooh, butcher knife. Sweet. And then just steps out the door and kind of like, next house. And just kind of keeps going down the street.
I mean, that's kind of the thing about this film, you know, that we talked about, you know, is, I mean, it's like an hour and a half long gear montage.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, all right, you know, step one, get the clothes. Step two, get the mask. Step three, get the weapon. Step four, get the victim.
Yeah, and whole Jamie Lee Curtis's whole like training montage in the backyard with the guns and stuff, and she has like the whole panic room underneath the kitchen where like she hits a button and the kitchen island slides back, and there's this whole like badass basement with like a roll up door full of guns. And that was one thing too I kind of noticed about it, because people were saying, how do you make this movie? Because Jamie Lee Curtis has, I mean, she's not been as crazy as some of like the anti-gun Hollywood people, but she has said some anti-gun things. Like, well, how do you portray someone who's, you know, believes in guns to defend themselves and whatnot, but you're anti-gun? I did notice that even though she has this impressive arsenal, it's all hunting rifles, shotguns, and wheel guns. There's not a single black rifle or high capacity mag in the bunch. So I'm like, she's still like, you know, we're not going to put any scary tactical shit. But, you know, like the most tactical thing in there is a, you know, pistol grip shotgun. But everything else, it's hunting rifles and wheel guns.
But, I mean, that's kind of the crazy thing to me is, you know, a lot of people look at the tactical style rifles and, you know, instantly think, oh, my God, it's menacing. And it's like, no, this 30-06 cartridge I got right here, that's going to do a hell of a lot more damage than, you know, my 223 or 556.
Yeah, and she even has that thing, like, once they find out Michael's out, Michael's killing people, she goes and gets her daughter. Because she tries to go there first when they first hear that he's escaped, and tries to give her a gun. And she's like, Mom, you're just being paranoid. He's not coming back here. Get the hell out of my house. And until people's bodies start dropping. And
well, I mean, I like the, you know, the husband's comment. He's like, you know, I've trained in jiu-jitsu. And, you know, he's the first motherfucker to get whacked on.
Like, yeah. But, like, once, you know, bodies start dropping, and we'll get back to that, you know, and she takes them back to the house, and she's like, takes them to the, you know, shows them the cool basement, and she's like, all right, pick your poison. And, of course, hands the husband, who's kind of a goober, like, you know, a little revolver. She's like, here, revolver, doesn't jam. Throws her daughter, like, the lever action. She's like, stopping power and accuracy. And then she pulls out her little pistol grip shotgun. He's like, and this is tactical. Let's do this. I mean, she got a point. You know, it may not be high capacity, but a good Marlin, you know, 45-70 or whatever is going to, you know, put a hole in a motherfucker. But then, you know, like I said, that the thing I thought was like there's not a whole lot of comedy in this movie, but the most comedic part is when he goes to kill the granddaughter's friend who's babysitting this this kid. And that's probably like the funniest sequence too, because he's like, you know, talking shit to him the whole, you know, whole time. She's like, oh, I'm gonna tell my mom you're a, you know, you're gonna be smoking weed and got your boyfriend coming up. She's like, oh yeah, well, I'm gonna tell her, like, you know, you're up watching movies you're not supposed to and cussing and whatnot.
Well, no,
He's like, oh, fuck.
You know, I just love that line, you know. It's like, yeah, you know, abracadabra, you know, magic. He's like, no, you're talking about weed, and I'm going to call my mom. And she's like, well, I'm going to tell your mom about your browser history.
Yeah.
Oh, hell no.
Yeah, that's the modern equivalent of, I'm going to tell your mom about the Playboys under your bed. And sure enough, when the boyfriend shows up too, you know, the kid comes down, she's like, he's like, there's somebody in my room. I just woke up and he was standing in the doorway breathing. Who the fuck does that? And they're like, oh, the kid's having nightmares, whatever. And she goes upstairs and, like, looks around the room. She's like, hey, what are you doing here? No, duh. And, like, comes out and scares him. And he's like, oh, you bitch. She's like, come on, I'll tuck you in. So she tucks him in. And he's like, will you just check the closet one? You know, shut the closet door before you leave? She's like, yeah, sure, kid. And then goes, like, shut the door, and it won't shut, and opens it up, and there's Michael. And the kid's like, oh, shit, I really didn't see somebody. And just fucking leaves her. And he, like, runs downstairs. The boyfriend's out there, and he's like, get the fuck out. He's going to kill us. And just, like, just takes off down the street and leaves, like, the boyfriend. And sure enough, yeah, boyfriend gets it, too.
I mean, he did damage the bike.
Yeah, he deserved to die. But yeah, he got, like, pinned to the wall too with a knife, which is pretty badass. And, you know, the deputy goes in there, you know, trying to clear the house and finds the girl, and, you know, Mike's in the, like, next room, but Jamie Lee Curtis showed, you know, she's listening.
Well,
hold on.
How he finds the girl is very interesting, you know, because it's got the sheet with the, you know, eye holes cut out, so it looks like a ghost sitting in a chair,
yeah,
you know, just under the blanket, and, you know, it's like,
what
looks amiss, and, you know, pulls it off. Of course, there's the body, and I was like, that's kind of funny.
Yeah, too, because, like, in the original movie, like, when it showed, like, Kid Mike, when he makes his first kill before he's dressed as a ghost.
Yes.
So you see, like, the ghost, you're like, oh, shit, is that Mikey? Nope, it's a body. But, yeah, Jamie Lee Curtis, like, you know, she's listening to the police scanner because she's in hunting mode with her big-ass revolver. And, you know, she hears the call and shows up at the house and sees him looking out the window and tries to shoot him. It turns out she's actually seeing his reflection in a mirror. But it's, like, enough to, like, alert the cop that, oh, hell, he's behind me. And he pops off a couple rounds. And, you know, she shoots him in the shoulder as he's leaving. But, of course, you know, Mike's a tough bastard and doesn't, you know. So when the sheriff in her belt shows up, you know, yeah, she's there. She's like, I've been praying for this night for 40 years. And the deputy's like, really? That's some dumbass shit to pray for. I was like, that's funny.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's just kind of the, you know, the crazy thing, you know, about it was, I don't know.
Oh, and
just kind of that interaction. And, you know, there when Jamie Lee Curtis is standing, you know, like, behind the crime scene tape, you know, just, you know, listening and
she
watching.
She showed up at the gas station and whatnot. And very Michael-esque herself, just kind of hanging out in the background, you know, waiting for shit to happen.
So, I mean, I don't know. I personally feel like Michael Myers might be a great candidate for, you know, somebody that wants to market a new sponge, because I feel like he just absorbs all this information. He never speaks, so he's always hearing, always, you know.
He's a good listener.
Analyzing, and
when he kills the daughter's dude friend, like, you know, the dude friend who's always secretly in love with his best friend, girlfriend, when he's like, just tries, you know. They leave the Halloween dance, and, you know, he's trying to escort her home and tries to kiss her, and she just, like, you know, punches him and leaves him in the backyard. And he sees, like, he's like, oh, sorry, in your backyard, bro. Don't mind me. I'm just really drunk. He's like, you ever wanted a girl real bad, but she didn't want you? And then, the security lights come on, and there's, like, Mikey, like, you know, kills him and hangs him on a fence. But, you know, that's the other twist, too, because, you know, the doctor finally wakes up, tells him what's really going on, and he's on patrol with Hawkins, who they find there because, you know, they're not able to find the daughter because her phone got destroyed, and Jamie Lee Curtis has gathered up her, you know, daughter and son-in-law and took her back to her compound with, like, a police escort, and they're out trying to find the the daughter. So they finally, and, you know, they finally see Michael like walking down the street, and he's like, hold on, and just runs his ass over with the car. And then you get the whole twist that, oh, the doctor let him out. And he's like obsessed with Michael because he's always like, you know, I've studied him all this time and I've learned nothing. Loomis was lucky enough to see the predator in the wild. Like I've only been able to study him in captivity. I've never seen him in the wild. So, you know, he's got that little cool, like hidden scalpel pin thing and Jacks Hawkins. And he's like, oh no, I'm going to, you know, put Michael and you in the car and I'm going to take you to mama's house and, you know, and turn him loose on her so I can finally study it. Maybe I can get a reaction out of him and find out why he does this. But yeah.
Yeah. Cause I like how, you know, the granddaughter tries to bribe him too, and it's like, you know, hey, when he killed my friend, he spoke, but, you know, you've got to let me out of the car now before, you know, I tell you what he said. And, of course, you know, Michael Myers wakes up before then. And
oh, yeah, and the doctor, like, I had to try on the mask. I mean, that doctor's crazy as shit. Like, for a second there, I thought, like, you know, because he, you know, tricked Hawkins and told him Michael was dead. And when he goes to, like, finish him off, he stabs him in the neck, but no, of course, he's just knocked out. So I was like, shit, is the rest of the movie going to be the doctor pretending to be Michael? But no, Mikey got back up and, like, just freaking curb stomps his ass. He's like, come on, say something, and just squishes his head. And, like, that was the other, like, really creepy-ass kill of the movie is when the two cops, because they park down the street from where the cops are working security at Lori's house, and they roll up and, you know, find the doctor dead, and of course, you know what's going to happen to them. So the patrol car pulls up in the yard, and the idiot, you know, husband, who's like, oh, cops must want something. I'm going to open the locked door and go out and see what it is. And he walks up to the car, and through the tinted glass, you see what looks like a lit jack-o'-lantern. He's like, what the fuck? And like opens it up, and like the one cop's there with his like throat slit, and what you think is a jack-o'-lantern is the other cop's severed head that's been hollowed out with a mag light stuck inside of it as the pumpkin light. I was like, oh, that's fucking wicked.
Yeah, there was definitely some creativity and stuff that went into it. I mean, I don't know. I expected the car to roll up and, you know, Michael Myers just put a hand through the glass and, like,
drag his ass in and said it was like a decoy. And, yeah, and, of course, the idiot husband died. But, yeah, once, like, you know, he's there at the house and you know, Jamie locks the daughter in the, you know, tells her to hide in the basement or whatnot.
Which is crazy because you never see the armory down there again. Like,
well, you do when she gets the rifle later on.
But, you know, I'm sorry if you're like, hey, this is the ground that you've now got to hold. Dude, I'm arming myself with every fucking thing in sight, you know? I'm not cowering. Like, that was kind of the thing for me that's like, man, you know, yeah, I get it. You were young when you had this training and you learned how to shoot and everything else, but now's when you need to apply some of that shit.
And
it
eventually kicks in a little late. Well, that was like one of the coolest turns of the movie. And I'll get to that in a second. But, you know, of course Michael reaches to the door and grabs Jamie, and she ends up blowing his couple of his fingers off with the shotgun and retreats down to the basement and gets the lever action rifle and comes back up. But her house, like I said, this is the house I want. Cause not only is there the cool, like, panic room basement with the armory underneath the island counter, she's booby trapped like each room of the house. So as she's going through with the rifle, which, you know, the house has giant spotlights on the roof. You can't have one gun with a weapon light.
That's what kills me about, you know, so many, you know, video games are notorious for doing it. And, you know, you see it a lot in movies too, where for some reason nobody has, you know,
you spent all this time prepping and you never thought to like mount a light on one of your weapons. It's just piss poor.
Out of the weapons I own, all but two have lights mounted on them.
Yeah. But like, I liked how she, like, when she started clearing the rooms, she had like these metal grate doors and
hit the switch. And,
so,
you know,
as she clears a room, she hits a button and the door slams down. So it's like, he has nowhere to hide. She's like, there's no way he's going to like sneak back into a room. I'm like, that's badass. I was like, as far as like, you know, her prepping and whatnot, it's like, you know, no, you might be hiding someone here, but I'm going to eliminate your hiding spots one by one till I find you. And eventually she runs into him in that room where she has all her Target mannequins set up. And I like that because they're fighting and stabbing each other and shit. And he gets the rifle away from her and throws her off the balcony. And you know, she's down there like...
I felt like we've seen that before, too.
Yeah. Well, she's down there in the laying down below the glass. And at that point, the granddaughter finally makes it into the house. And Michael hears her. And, you know, mom opens up, you know, hears her, you know, opens up the thing to call her down to the basement. And Michael hears it and looks back at the house. Well, then he turns back around. Jamie's body's gone. And he has that moment like, huh, so this is how it feels. You know, he just kind of has that pause. Because it's happened to him. You know, he's done that to other people so many times. We're like, we shot him. He's down. Fuck, where'd he go? And because he just pauses for that brief second. It's like, almost like, huh, so that's the way it feels. That made me laugh so hard. I was like,
it was inappropriately. An
epiphany. Yeah. But yeah, I like that, like, you know, he, because at this point, like, she's missing, they're in the basement, and he's, like, finally figures out where they're hiding, because at one point they shot, like, up through the floor at him, and he tears that island off, and, but he doesn't come down in the hole, and of course, like, the daughter finally looks over at the weapons rack and sees the rifle she was taught to shoot with, because it's got her initials carved in the bottom. So she grabs it and is holding it up at the open door. But then she starts kind of breaking down. She's like, I'm sorry, Mom. I know you trained me to kill him, but I just can't do it. And just is like crying hysterically. And you're like, oh, she's dead. You know, her and her daughter are dead. She's like having this like, you know, breakdown moment.
It was that moment that I thought the granddaughter was going to step up and be like, Mom, you know, give me the fucking weapon.
She's like,
and
you know, she's crying and holding the rifle. And then finally Mike's like, oh, yeah, she's not going to be. Because she's like, I can't do it. I'm sorry, Mom. And finally steps into the steps. And she goes from like crying to like completely serious. And she's like, gotcha, motherfucker. And just shoots him like in the like side of the, you know, like the jaw or something. But she's like, but that whole like hysterical was just a trap to get him to finally come in. She's like, nope, not a victim, asshole. And as soon as she shoots him and he stumbles back, then the there's like a beam of light kind of in the like the darkness behind him. And there's Jamie waiting for him. She's like, happy Halloween, Michael. And just kicks his ass into the basement. Which, like I said, they all come running up and she like, you know, hits a button in these, I don't know, spikes come over and close off the basement. And she finally says, like, you thought all this time this house was my cage, but no, it's actually a trap. And she's like, hits the button and like every room in the house has like a flamethrower that like kicks on. She's like, no, this whole time you thought I was building this house to keep me safe from the world, but no, this is just the most elaborate Admiral Ackbar. It's a trap. So she's like, yeah, she's like, I got him locked in here. I'm burning this motherfucker down.
But, you know, that was my thing. I mean, we've seen him, you know, in the first film, you know, where all the oxygen tanks and everything else explode. It didn't work then.
Yeah, you have him trapped in the basement. He's looking up through the cage. Why not just double tap to the face and be sure? Nope, I'm doing this whole elaborate James Bond Wile E. Coyote trap of burning the house down.
And we're going to escape without ever, you know...
confirming he's dead. Which I've heard sequel is already in development.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was thinking about this, too. Like, the house goes up in flames. Stuff starts deteriorating. Who's to say he dies before one of these walls breaks down?
Yeah.
Oh, there's my exit.
Because we even get, like, a shot as, you know, once they escape and, like, are able to flag down a car coming so they can get like some medical attention because, you know, they're all half fucked up. They cuts back to like the inside of the house and everything burning, and you get a shot from the kitchen down into the basement and you see it all on flames, but you don't see Michael. So you don't know if he's like collapsed and dying or he's done peaced out somehow. Like, you know, there's a, he found a way, something burned out enough for him to escape or whatnot.
Here's the thing about Michael Myers. I mean, we saw him in the police cruiser. I mean, all it took was a fist, and there went the, you know, protection rack that, you know, separates, you know.
Yeah, he was able to kick through a, you know, kick the cage open. He got hit by a car and did nothing more than, like, just knock him out for a little while. So.
You know, I mean, that island, I mean, he pretty much decimates it, you know, without much effort. I mean, unless it's, like, a completely still reinforced, like,
concrete,
but I mean, you know, when it's panning up, I mean, it all looks, you know, wood panel and everything else. I'm sorry, He
might get a little toasty, but yeah. There's no real, I guess, post credit, like, you know, most horror movies, like, oh, killer's alive. Yeah, you know, I set through the entire credits, and there's not really a post credit scene. Like, as the credits end and everything is black, you hear him breathing. And people are saying that was a signal, yeah, he's still alive. And I've heard we've already got a sequel in development, so, you know. But if they didn't make it a sequel, the way they ended it, they could be like, yeah, Michael's dead, but we left it, you know, unclear enough that if we want him to return, he can.
I don't know. I mean, how do you kill Michael Myers? I mean, he's been shot multiple times, has little to no effect on him. You know, he's been hit by cars and everything. He's been, you know, set on fire, and, you know, obviously that didn't do the trick. I mean,
I think at this point you're just going to have to shove like 10 pounds of C4 up his ass and like pull the hit the detonator. Because, yeah.
Or maybe it's one of those things where, you know, it's the mask that is truly possessed, and, you know, that's why it has such an impact every time, you know, it gets within a certain vicinity of him. And, you know, maybe it's, we've got to destroy the mask more so than the being.
Yeah, they're going to make it all supernatural in the next one. That's one thing that I've kind of liked about Michael Myers as a character. It's like with Freddy and, you know, Jason, there's always been that element of the supernatural where Michael Myers is just a crazy motherfucker with a knife. You know, he's an extra strong human, but he's not like superhuman. He's like just a big ass dude. He's got that retard strength.
And that's a reference to Ross Patterson's book.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, my house is definitely not a Michael Myers proof. I'm realizing that.
But yeah, that her house, like, I mean, that was, like I said, her mistake of not mounting a weapon light on anything. Besides that, yeah, the rooms that seal off, and which that's also a thing that kind of made no sense, because it's like, I'm like, all right, the trigger to lock the doors are on the outside of the room. What if you were trying to hide from him in that room? Like, there's no trigger to, like, lock him out. There's only triggers to lock him in. Which, that kind of didn't make any sense to me until I saw the end where she, like, flipped the switch and the self-destruct torches kicked in. So yeah. It's like, I'm like, oh, okay. That makes no sense. She didn't build those cages to protect herself. It's like, no, those were traps. If I get him in a room, I can wall them off and burn this motherfucker down.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely an empowering take, you know. I mean,
yeah, the big ass spotlights on the roof, and even like the grounds themselves. If you notice, like, there was a decent kill zone around the house. Like, all the trees and stuff were like trimmed back from the house, where you got like a good open field to fire. I mean, I was like, the house was like set up pretty badass. And I kind of want, if I ever have the money to buy like a good amount of property, I want the creepy Mannequin firing range in my backyard, because I thought that was cool as shit too.
Yeah, I don't know about keeping the creepy mannequins inside the house though.
That's, yeah, that was a little. I mean, could have a shed in the backyard with all your targets in them, but just to have the room full of the creepy mannequins was a little off putting. She had like a weird kind of tactical hoarder thing going on. So as we kind of get into the wrapping it up here, you know, any final thoughts on, you know, on this new rendition of the new timeline, the semi reboot of Halloween?
I mean, it was definitely uplifting, and it was a throwback to nostalgia. Now, you know, I can see both sides of the argument. I mean, to me, I'm a big fan of the Halloween franchise. I enjoyed the movie, but I can see where some people are, you know, may not be as familiar. You know, if you don't have the nostalgia factor, I think it makes it a little bit harder to enjoy because there are so many nods and everything to, you know, the 1978 Halloween. But as somebody that has wanted that throughout the timeline of the Halloween franchise,
yeah, because
it was perfect, you know.
All the mini sequels have strayed so far from that, you know, original John Carpenter. And I even saw like one of the an interview with him where they asked him why he wanted. He's like, ever since Halloween 3, I've spent so much time bitching about how other people have done this that I'm like, it's time for me to, like, you know, do something about it. Like, you know, I can sit around and watch and complain about other people doing it, or I can just fix the problem myself. And Blumhouse, too, does a great job of making these, like, low-budget horror movies that are, that are badass. I mean, pretty much anything Blumhouse puts out has been pretty entertaining as a fan of horror.
Yeah, and I mean, I got to say, too, that, you know, there was quite a bit of misdirection and stuff, you know, like you talked about with, Sartan, you know. Yeah, all of a sudden, he becomes the killer, and it's like...
Yeah,
this is what it feels like.
Yeah, because it was so weird because he wasn't. You know, they're like, oh, you're the new Loomis, but he wasn't really like Loomis because Loomis was all about, I made a mistake of, like, you know, I should have, like, had this kid killed long ago, and, like, I'm here to correct that mistake. And but he's like, oh no, we need to study him. Like, you know, he still belongs to the state, officer. You can't, like, kill him. He's like, no, I find this guy. He's dead. But then you turn around, and it's not just a scientific curiosity. He's got like an obsession where he's like, you know, wants to know what it's like to be Michael. Yeah, that was a that was an interesting twist on things that I did not see coming.
And then, you know, I don't know. I mean, I like the evolution that really kind of gives you insight into, you know, Michael, not just crazy, but just how situational, aware, and, you know, everything he is, where nothing is done without some sort of pre-planning and everything.
Like, yeah, because they make that a point when when the podcasters are talking to the doctor, like, well, we want to see how catatonic and how aware he is. Like, no, he's actually aware of everything.
Yeah, he's like... He was aware the moment you pulled in. Like,
yeah, he's like, he's not like catatonic. Like, he has the ability to speak. He chooses not to. He's very aware of his surroundings and what's going on. You know, he's just unresponsive. And, you know. And I, like I said, this movie.
So
to me,
as somebody that hasn't spoke in 40 years, what do you think? What do you envision the voice being?
It'd be so weird if it's like a real high pitched, like.
Hi, gosh.
He's this really huge dude, and he's like, ah, fuck, I'm in a basement.
Like, I mean, you know, he's big. I mean, you would think, you know, low and bassy, but, you know, I would think that,
yeah,
if yes,
you
can
vocal
hear
cords
words,
that,
but,
that
you
long,
know, if
yeah,
you haven't
have
used your...
Atrophy, I guess.
You know?
Be like, hey. <"Hi." laughs> Oh, yeah, that would be so weird. But, yeah, this movie did very much, like, kind of had some parallels to me with T2. Where, like, if you remember the original Terminator, Sarah Connor's very much the, you know, girl in distress, like, hysterical, you know, at times. You know, kind of a badass by then. And in the original, you know, Jamie Lee Curtis was, you know, very much the young scream queen. But when you get into that second installment of... you know, Judgment Day, like, you know, Sarah Connor's a badass warrior, and you know, Jamie Lee Curtis has kind of gone the same route. But then it just, you know, not the... From the trailers, you thought that was going to be it. She was just going to be, like, this hard ass of the whole movie. But there was very much, like, you know, vulnerability and elements of, like, PTSD and stuff. So you can see she's...
And, you know, and then, too,
she's
like...
hard ass, but she's still got some vulnerability and some...
And then you see
a
genuine desire to, like, you know, she takes the money that the podcasters give her, and, you know, she offers it to the granddaughter to do whatever, and it's like, you know,
go
see the world, you know, go travel, live a life, you know,
Yeah,
do this shit. You know, I fucked up with your mom. I don't want to, you know, continue fucking up, you know, anywhere else.
Yeah, it's like, my damage is not your damage. You know, go be that too. And she may have been like, get as far away from me as possible because, you know, you're liable to get hurt in the crossfire if this goes down. But yeah, it's like, it's a, yeah, it definitely wasn't like a one-dimensional character. They did a very good job of like, not only fleshing out her and like her daughter's character too. Like, you know, like I said, that whole being like hysterical and whatnot, and then flipping that switch as soon as she has Michael in the crosshairs and was like, nope, this was a trap. I am my mother's daughter. I thought that was a cool twist on her character too.
So I don't know. I wonder if in, you know, the next installment, if it's the, you know, the granddaughter we really see come to light, and
yeah,
you know,
like,
it really becomes her battle, right?
Yeah, because as they're like escaping, like, you know, it, Michael's before the trap kind of slams shut, he grabs the daughter's feet and stuff, and she picks up the knife he dropped and like stabs him in the a couple times, so he lets go of her mom, but then she does not let go of that knife. I mean, even when they're relatively safe in the truck on the way to the hospital, you know, the camera just kind of pans and zooms into her just still clutching that freaking knife for like all it's worth. So, you know, like I said, this may be the passing of the torch, and, you know, the next movie's all about, you know, her versus Michael instead of
I mean, it was definitely awesome, you know, to see the reprisal of you know, Jamie Lee Curtis in the franchise again and stuff. And but I very much feel the same, that, you know, it's almost a you know, passing of the torch and a memento. I mean, this was the nostalgia I was looking for.
Yeah.
You know, the next film, you know, is the future?
Yeah,
you know, it,
the Friday the 13th reboot sucked. The Nightmare on Elm Street reboot was ridiculous. This is like the first, bringing something back but staying true to the original and staying true to the universe. You know, it's like, it's,
I mean, this,
if they had done like a full remake or a reboot, I think it would have been trash. But yeah, making a true sequel, and not only making a true sequel, but kind of giving us a little bit of a different story and, you know, a kind of a fresh idea on it all was definitely a cool take on it. I'm kind of glad they did it this way and not gone back to the old, hey, let's reboot everything bullshit that we've complained about time and time again. So also, any final thoughts on your Monty there?
Yeah, the Monty's good. I mean, it's you know, the spices remain throughout. You know, spice, cinnamon, espresso are all notes that I picked up. I mean, it's complex. It all around is a you know, very decent cigar. You know, in fact, you know, it's got a very lingering spice. Like, it stays on the tip of the tongue, you know, for quite some time. And I'm thoroughly enjoying it.
Yeah, and this, you know, this Don Emilio stayed pretty peppery throughout. It's definitely got some strength to it, but it's not a overpowering strength. I see where the creaminess and the coffiness with the kind of, it's kind of like a like a spicy coffee, like a you know, like a peppery coffee mix, which I'm really digging. I'll definitely have, and also like at that event I went to, GTO has released a new cigar. It's their kind of like 10th anniversary cigar. All the tobaccos that are in it are at least 10 years old. It's called the Corona del Ceballo, if I'm pronouncing that right. It comes in a Corojo and a Maduro. I had the Maduro. That one was an excellent cigar as well. So if you get a chance to pick one of those up, I recommend giving that one a try too. And with that, we'll be right back. it's time for some science. You ready to learn some fuckery?
Oh, I'm ready to learn. What do we got on the agenda? We got some spooky shit, or we got some legitimate knowledge shit?
I got some, a little bit of both.
So I get the best of both worlds, huh?
As I try to relight without burning my beard off. That's the dangers of having a beard and getting low on your cigars. Going to relight can be dangerous. So first up, you've always heard the term shitting bricks, especially when you get scared. When Michael Myers is chasing you, you may shit a brick. But I've never heard of peeing bricks.
Is that kind of like a kidney stone?
Kinda. Well, scientists at the University of Cape Town are creating the world's first sustainable bricks made from human pee.
That's interesting.
Literally pee bricks. And we're not talking about those urinal cakes. No, these are actual construction bricks made from pee. They're calling it a biobrick building material, and it comes in various shapes and strengths, but it's kind of created in the same way seashells are, where it's a employs a process called microbial carbonate precipitation, that is able to turn urine into, building blocks. The urine comes from specially designed fertilizer producing urinals, and it's basically the pee is mixed with loose sand that is colonized with a bacteria that produces urease, which is an enzyme that breaks down the urea in urine to produce calcium carbonate by way of a chemical reaction, which basically cements the sand together in a mold, creating a brick. But what's also kind of revolutionary about this process is all done at like room temperature. It's a chemical reaction with this bacteria, where your standard house building bricks are actually cooked in a kiln at 400 degrees Celsius, which, creates carbon dioxide and other waste products, where this is literally taking waste products and making usable building materials. So it's, doesn't take, all it takes is a lot of pee and not, gas to fire furnaces and all the, the resources that go into that, plus the byproducts of such.
So I wonder if there's going to be a way, at all the home improvement stores are going to have a big urine tank or something, that they can send to manufacturers to be like, hey, we need these bricks, made. And
last thing is, it's not only is it, like I said, it's kind of weird to use the word cleaner when you're talking about pee, but not only is it a cleaner process, but the bricks can also be designed to the need. So basically, they're able to make different strength bricks with this same process. It's like basically, if a client wanted a brick that was, as strong or stronger than a 40% limestone brick, all they would have to do is allow the, bacteria to grow longer. So it's basically like the longer this stuff is allowed to grow, the harder the resulting material is. So they can actually, kind of build different types of brick using the same, or different strength brick using the same process.
That's pretty awesome. But does it make your house smell like piss?
Yeah, hopefully it's like, the chemical process deodorizes them. It's like, man, this neighborhood smells like urine. Oh yeah, sorry, we've been using bio bricks. Oh, and speaking of, false engineering, China is building a fake moon.
Is this one actually made of cheese?
No, the city of Chengdu say they're going to have an artificial moon by 2020. This may be a cover for China building the first Death Star. That's no moon. But what they're wanting to do, the lead scientist Wu Qingfeng of the Chengdu Aerospace Science and Technology Microelectronics Systems Research Institute, which is a big damn word, basically they're wanting to build this satellite that's basically going to be a you know, big ass reflector that will reflect sunlight down on the town, and basically giving it a, you know, a year long full moon. Yeah, you know, it said it's going to be approximately, you know, 6 to 50 miles in diameter, and will like reflect light, which will also be adjustable, so they can actually will be able to adjust the light. And they're saying that this is kind of going to be save electricity by using this fake moon to reflect sunlight. It's kind of going to eliminate the need for street lights and stuff to light up the town. So it's like, you know, this moon is supposed to be replace all their like street lights and outdoor lighting that, you know, they have to generate electricity to run. So it's supposed to be, you know, better for the environment. But this also could be a trick not only to build the first Death Star, but werewolves. I'm saying the city of Chengdu, to loop it back to Halloween, could be a city of werewolves. And like I said, now instead of like, you know, wolfing out once a year, you got a year round, or once a month, you got a year round full moon. I'm just saying this is going to be a plot of a horror movie at some point. What was that? That one horror movie, it was like 28 Days a Night or whatever it was, where it's like the month long, the vampires all invade that city in Alaska where it's like night for a month. It's going to be that, but werewolves. Like, we got a year-round full moon. This is the plot of the next...
Underworld,
yeah. The Lycans have designed a fake moon.
Better stock up on some silver bullets. Oh, wait, it's China. You can't have guns.
Silver ninja swords.
Or, you know, slingshots.
Yeah.
You gotta get something with some range.
Yeah, now is your time to invest in silver, because, you know, silver prices are probably going to skyrocket once we have to defeat the werewolf army.
I could see that being a real thing. Our Skynet takes over the fake moon and...
Oh, God. Yeah.
Or the fake moon just, for whatever reason, crashes to Earth, and that would be bad.
Are all the conspiracy theorists like, we never landed on the moon, the moon landing was fake? They'd be like, see, they're building a fake moon. I told you the moon landing wasn't real. It's a Chinese conspiracy, man. Oh.
What a twist.
But from there to, you know, one of the, as we've said, one of Michael Myers', you know, iconic characteristics is his trademark mask. Well, they've let an AI design Halloween masks, and the results are kind of disturbing. Matt Reed, who works for a creative agency, Red Pepper in Tennessee, has basically built an AI that's using what it's called a generative adversarial network, which can recognize patterns in data and then try to reproduce things that fit that pattern. So basically, he fed this computer thousands of examples of popular Halloween masks, and then let it try to create its own that fit that pattern, and came up with some. He's been releasing pictures of some of the designs that it has come up with, and I mean, I wouldn't want to run into any of these in a dark alley.
I see Pogo the Clown. I see, you know, what could be Michael Myers.
There's some weird, like, melted skull looking things.
Might be Leatherface. I don't know. You know, this almost looks like somebody took, like, images of actual masks and just used a blur tool. And, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, look, the AI created this. What? Blob?
Yeah, there's one he said it looks like a sock puppet smoking a cigarette. Or one that called Pirate JFK or Trump Nugget. I mean, it's come out with just all kind of just weird ass images. I mean, I don't know if these would work as a mask, but definitely this could be the next horror movie creature. Kind of reminds me of what the hell's the big skinny guy?
Slenderman.
Yeah, like some like weird Slenderman images of like these weird faceless bobs.
That's crazy. Yeah, I don't know. This is wild. This is huge. For the Trump Nugget.
Pirate JFK. Because it looks like it has an eye patch. Well, you know, also with, you know, Halloween and the kind of the resurgence of popularity of horror movies, there's some scientists that have been kind of wanting, you know, to answer the question of why is it fun to be scared? You know, why do we spend, you know, millions of dollars going to haunted houses and watching horror movies and whatnot? So they devised a study to kind of study real time what makes fear fun, and they investigated a kind of an extreme haunted house, not just your regular Halloween haunted house, but this is one that's supposed to be an adults only haunted house up in Pennsylvania that where, you know, the actors can restrain and touch you. It's like these, like, you know, the hardcore serious haunted houses. And they got 262 guests that had already purchased tickets and got them to agree to be studied. So basically they gave them a survey about their expectations and how they were feeling prior to going through. And then, you know, also a different survey once they left. But then they also used mobile EEG technology to compare their brainwave activity as they set through various tests and whatnot before and after the attraction, and saw how kind of going through it changed their brain patterns. And kind of the results, you know, were that, you know, they felt less anxious and tired directly after their trip through the haunted attraction. The more terrifying, you know, the better and more happy they were feeling afterwards. which was kind of weird. They said basically it's kind of like I guess you're testing yourself. So there's this feeling of some of the results they got was that that these people are facing their fears, are going through a you know, stressed situation, and then the kind of the endorphins of actually accomplishing said task at the end kind of, you know, gave them that reward, happy feeling. And there's it's kind of the same as running your first 5K and, like, you know, not knowing if you're going to make it through. And then once you complete it, you're like so much better. And there's that even like with the testing of the ones that they tested their brain waves on, that there was a widespread decrease in brain activity from before to after. Said it's almost kind of the results of people they've studied that go through meditation, that, like, you know, your brain's kind of, I guess, a little noisy and whatnot, but this, you know, the rush of the whole, you know, whatever, fight or flight, stuff like that, was able to kind of like shut down your brain through this all and kind of wipe away the excess noise. So when they were done, it was almost like a, I guess, a cathartic experience. And he said, but they said, like, you know, it's, for this, you know, fear to be fun, it kind of has to be a voluntary experience. It, you know, for people who are kind of dragged through a haunted house, it wasn't as beneficial to people that knew what they were getting going in. And, you know, they're also the, you know, has to be fake danger. You know, you kind of have to know that you're not going to be killed while going through this before the fear is actually fun.
That's always my thing. I was like, man, what if there's some fucking crazy dude and, like, hey, I'm going to work as a haunted house actor, and, you know, people are going to come in here and just think it's part of the act. And
oh, yeah, it's like, so, you know, if you don't want to practice mindful meditation, they said it was what they compared it to, you can go to a haunted house. That's just your meditation.
I still feel like year-round haunts need to be more of a thing.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, because as someone who worked in haunted houses, it was kind of the same to me, because, like, not just the fun of being scared, but the fun of scaring others too. Like, so that was kind of like my vacation every year. Like, all the aggression that I built up through the year and stress, like, being, you know, in a haunted house and scaring the piss out of other people was kind of my therapy for the year. Let me burn off all that aggression. You know, at the end of Halloween, I'm like, ah, I feel so much more peaceful now. I've gotten all my rage out on random customers.
You feel that way because you can't talk or anything. My voice has left.
Yeah, there's like,
I can no longer argue.
Yeah, you're kind of forced to be silent at the end. Well, that's all I got this week. Now for some news.
I'm going to get that endorphin rush when this podcast is over.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And we're inviting you to check out our podcast, the Earth Station DCU, We talk all things DC Comics, television, movies, and news.
We'll give you weekly comic recommendations and keep you informed on what's going on with DC TV and movies.
We are part of the ESO Network. You can catch a new episode weekly on iTunes, Google Music, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are found.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to Nerd News.
Yeah, news.
All right, go ahead and jump into it right now. I can't say this is a shock, but Lucasfilm standalone Boba Fett movie has been canceled. Scrapped. Not happening. No way. Not no how.
Yeah, it's kind of the backlash of Solo's underperformance that they've, we discussed before that they were going to kind of take a step back on these yearly Star Wars movies. But that was like kind of the one of the standalones I was really looking forward to was a Boba Fett movie. But then again, we've talked last week about the Mandalorian series.
Well, and that's the thing.
Get some Fett in that.
You know, the focus has shifted, and, you know, it is 100%, you know, all about the Mandalorian. I mean, Disney, you know, going live with their streaming service and everything else, I can't really say that I'm all that surprised. I mean...
Yeah, because, I mean, they've done good with the Marvel Netflix series and stuff like that, so... And it's probably a whole lot less risky to do Star Wars on the small screen than it is on... to spend, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars making a movie that you're kind of you're required to make money off of people actually going out and seeing it, where a streaming service you're, you know, making money regardless, because even if someone don't watch it, they still got to buy the service to to get into it. You know, so you're getting their money one way or another. So I think they're probably going to swing more heavily toward the Netflix model of things with this new
service
coming out.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, you know, anytime, you know, what are you going to do to separate yourself from the other streaming services? Well, I mean, first of all, buy out all your competition. I mean, naturally, you know, when you have unlimited resources to do that. But, I don't know. I mean, I'm with you. This is one of the films that I know you and I and a whole slew of other people, you know, I've been wanting is, you know, to see a, you know, a larger Fett presence. But, I don't know. You know, I feel like this is the one film that, you know, really could have been great. But I guess now we'll pay our $20 a month that we've been, you know, saying that, man, do I really want to pay another $20 a month?
Yeah, especially with the Netflix has been canceling off all the Marvel properties and whatnot. You got to assume that Disney's is pretty much just like, we're not renewing any of our contracts, so we're going to let all these other properties that die and come back to, you know, our ownership. And, you know, and Netflix as well is like, why are we going to continue to produce these when we know we're going to lose, you know, the rights to them eventually? So, yeah, all this stuff is going to move into the Disney service eventually anyway. So yeah, it's probably going to be, if you want to see new Marvel, new Star Wars content, you're going to have to pay the subscription service, as much as I didn't want another streaming service. I mean, it's getting more and more where I'm like, fuck, I'm going to have to.
Yep. You got to pay to play, sir.
Motherfuckers.
All right. And then talking about Marvel and Netflix and whatnot. Well, you know, last episode we mentioned that James Gunn had been hired by DC. Well, you know, now it looks like Marvel Studios has, hired Wonder Woman 2, writer for an untitled film. So, David Callahan, welcome to Marvel.
Just going to switch. Which,
yes.
We've said DC needs to take a page from the Marvel universe, and they literally have at this point.
So maybe you're going to start seeing, you know, a lot more DC directors and stuff, like, you know, all right, we got to infiltrate the base, so we got to do a couple of Marvel films so we can figure out, you know, how they do it. And then, you know, we'll reveal our true colors. And
Hell Hydra. But, you know, of the crap DC properties, you know, if they're going to poach any director, the Wonder Woman movie has been, like, the best of the bunch. So, yeah, it's yeah, if you're gonna steal somebody, steal steal that.
Yeah, well, I mean, apparently, you know, Callahan, you know, he did Mortal Kombat, and then Zombieland 2, you know, or Mortal Kombat reboot, rather.
Mm.
But, you know, I mean, you know, get a breath of fresh air. So
mix it up a little.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, apparently he has worked with, you know, Marvel and doing some of the unedited rewrite work for 2015's Ant-Man. So, I mean, you know, not completely new to the fray, but, you know, like you said, DC's got to get their numbers up. Those are rookie numbers.
Exactly.
All right, something I'm looking forward to and has rumored, you know, about for I don't even know how long now, but Martin Lawrence and Will Smith to come out and said that Bad Boys 3, you know, Bad Boys for Life is official.
Yeah, they've even tweeted out that photo of them on set together, finally. I mean, Bad Boys has been one of my favorite movies of all time, and it's... You know, it's not one of those that where you get a sequel every other year. I mean, I don't know how many years it was between the first and the second installment, and now, shit, a long time between the second and third installment. But yeah, this is one I'm still, like, excited to see.
And, you know, I'm also, you know, excited, too, because Jerry Bruckheimer, you know, is returning. So, sweet. I mean...
we know it's going to have a bunch of explosions.
But I'm with you, though. I mean, it's been a franchise that, you know, I've fallen in love with, and it's like, you know, one of those that, you know, I almost want to say it's intentional, you know, because yeah. It's almost like, oh, we'll dangle the carrot, you know, create a little bit of buzz. Oh, we're sorry, not this year, guys, you know.
Yeah, because it's, I mean, the action sequences were always great, but then the...
I mean, I just love the dynamic.
The interaction between Martin Lawrence and Will Smith has always been absolutely hysterical, so it's like... It's probably the best of the action comedy buddy cop movies. So yeah, I'm real excited about it. I mean, there was some rumors at one point that, like, you know, the original cast wasn't going to return. It was going to be like some new dudes. But I'm like, oh, thank God that we're finally getting the trilogy.
Yeah, I mean, this right now, I mean, of course, subject to change. But it looks like that. This film's scheduled to open January 17th, 2020. So, I don't know, you know. Excited for it. That's all I can say. So, we talked previously, too, on Todd McFarlane's upcoming Spawn reboot. And some of the challenges, some of the, you know, creative direction that he's wanting to go. Well, apparently production has now been pushed to June. So, who knows?
Yeah. We may get a movie. We may not.
So, as of right now, production set to be scheduled on, you know, June 2019. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, because I'm kind of curious, you know. Todd McFarlane's come out and said, no, I really want to take this in a, you know, horror genre direction. And
yeah, if any character you're going to do that with.
Spawn has, you know, always been a character. I mean, I've, growing up, you know, reading Spawn as a kid and stuff like that, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, it definitely is, like, if you're going to make a horror superhero movie, that's the property to do it with. Because, I mean, it's he's... soldier of hell or whatnot. I mean, it screams like horror movie.
So Hellboy. I don't know, which I mean I felt the same about Venom though. Like, you know, I really feel like Venom, you know, could be a bit darker and grittier and stuff than what we've seen. I haven't seen the newest film yet. It's still on my list, but
yeah, because the new film, like, with it being not R-rated. Yeah, I definitely said that should have been R-rated, darker, but it was actually pretty good. I mean, it was definitely different and didn't entirely suck. I mean, I was like, it was definitely was an entertaining and probably not the greatest of, you know, superhero movies, but it was, yeah, it was still pretty badass. But I would have liked them to have seen them gone a little harder with it, and maybe they will with the sequels, but yeah, it was pretty
Carnage.
Badass.
Damn it, give me Carnage. fucking want Carnage.
Yeah, it's wait till you see it. That's definitely being teased for the sequel.
Yeah, but I mean, you can't introduce Carnage into PG-13, though.
No, we need an R-rated sequel to do it right.
I don't know. Do you feel like they'd be willing to take the gamble? I mean, after all, apparently pre-Christmas there is a PG-13 Deadpool 2. Oh, God,
I hope that just fails miserably. Because I'm like, I don't want them saying, hey, look, we made money in a PG-13 Deadpool. We should make the Deadpool 3 PG. No. God, I hope this sucks so bad that people are like, no, this is the reason why we didn't want to do a PG Deadpool.
God, we should do a podcast episode, you know, that way, you know, compare and contrast.
Yeah.
I just want to see what's left out and, you know, if it's even the same film.
Yeah. Like, what's the runtime going to be? I mean, is it going to be shorter?
Runtime, 29 minutes.
Yeah. Or they just have, like, all the it's the same movie. They just bleep the cussing and then have Deadpool, the only one that notices, be like, what was it? Why did you keep beeping at me? What are you talking about?
Guys, I'm trying to have a dialogue here. That would be funny.
Yeah, if it's self-referential where he's like the only one that realizes it's it's edited and he's pissed off because no one else notices.
Because otherwise, I mean, it's going to be like buying a edited, you know, CD or something. You just don't do it. Like, yeah. I mean,
it's like I remember back in the day when CDs were a thing, talking to a guy at Walmart that was like, you know, the rep that was talking the shelves. I was like, hey, when's like, I think it was a Tupac album at the time come out. And they're like, oh, well, we may get the edited version. I'm like, yeah, that's why I don't buy CDs at Walmart. I just wanted to know when it come out because your stuff sucks. And he's like, yeah, sorry.
I mean, I don't understand it. I mean, you know, obviously they sell R-rated movies. Why not, you know, explicit album? Yeah. I mean, nowadays, I don't know too many folks that rush out to buy CDs like, you know, when we were growing up and such. But, yeah, I mean, that was always the thing. Like, I mean, especially if you listen to rap or something, it'd be like, all right, this, you know, 5-minute, you know, song has now been, oh, it's a minute and 29 seconds? Where's the rest of the song?
Yeah, especially when it was, like, the same price.
Yes.
I was like, I'm just going to go to, like, somewhere else and buy it where I can get the full version.
Or the edited version, you know, because somebody has to spend time to edit it, you know, is actually more expensive than the original, you know, unedited. So this is something that you had brought to my attention. Ian McGregor is going to be playing Black Mask in upcoming film Birds of Prey.
Which, that was an interesting comic book, and I remember the 90s TV show version of it. But, I mean, that's another good Batman villain, as the DC movie universe is kind of getting, they're redoing some things and so pretty much I think they're scrapping everything except for Wonder Woman, and because we're getting a new Superman, a new Batman, all that. You know, we've seen the Joker, we've seen the Penguin, we've seen, like, you know, the main bad guys. Hell, we've even seen Bane and Mr. Freeze in a couple movies. Black Mask is a old school Batman villain that we've not really seen on the big screen.
From, yeah,
so yeah,
absolutely.
It's kind of cool them doing more of a deep cut. This giving us we've seen him in some of the Arkham video games, but yeah, it's interesting, you know, seeing that on the, and Ewan McGregor being a bad guy too. I mean,
that's kind of crazy,
kinda,
you know. I mean,
as well,
you know, seeing him come from, you know, Disney's Christopher Robin, you know, to
yeah, Obi-Wan Kenobi and Christopher Robin, and now he's a bat villain. That's an interesting turn for him as an actor. It's gonna be nice to see if he can pull off evil.
Maybe he has seen the dark side.
Oh, he's gone full Sith.
Alrighty, and up next, going to talk about some video game news, because everything now gets a classic console. I don't know what that craze is all about. I mean,
nostalgia,
but apparently,
man.
You know, well, if you want to play original PlayStation, the PlayStation Classic games list has been announced. It's going to come with 20 loaded games. Most notable for me are Cool Borders, Destruction Derby, Metal Gear Solid.
Hell yeah, old,
you know,
old school.
I mean,
Metal
you
Gear.
Know, Twisted Metal is always a good one.
Hell yeah.
Siphon Filter is another great game that I grew up that I wish somebody would pick up and do something with.
Yeah, because that, like, you know, that whatever stealth games were, yeah, kind of. I haven't had a whole lot of those lately. But yeah, that was kind of the originator of the stealth action game, where it's like, you know, you really couldn't win if you tried to run and gun like most of us like to do.
But I mean, Siphon Filter, I think, gave a little bit of you know, both worlds. I mean, it wasn't as stealthy as, you know, some of the genres, you know, like more specifically like an Assassin's Creed or something like that. But I mean, you know,
kind of like the old Hitman.
You
always try to get the
you know, go in and be like, oh, I can go in through this waterway here, and you know. So I don't know. I mean, I guess it's kind of cool. I mean, there's a few. Final Fantasy VII, that's a big one. I mean, a few things there. The thing I wished with these would be the ability to, you know, I've seen some of the different Chinese consoles where, like, you can play multiple game cartridges from multiple systems.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you were doing a Nintendo or, you know, a PlayStation or whatever, then have the ability to play the games. Like, yes, I understand having the preloaded, you know, digital, but an optical drive to play any games that are just sitting around collecting dust would be awesome.
Because just about every comic book store you go into now, like the classic games has been a big market where people are, you know, going back and buying those original systems and original games. So these new, more reliable classic models, they're just like a kind of a, they look like the original system, but they're all kind of tiny. Make them playable where we can actually, like, you know, plug in the old game if you still have some, you know, NES or PlayStation shit laying around. I think it would have been a little bit cooler.
Yeah, well, like, I bought the Atari version, you know, and unfortunately it's just not playable. Like, you know, because the hardware and stuff, you know, the controller inputs are a bit too, you know, updated or, you know, something. I don't know. It doesn't quite...
That's the thing that doesn't really make sense with PlayStation or even Xbox coming out with a classic system, is most of this game stuff you've already been able to play online in, like, emulators and stuff. I know you've got a whole bunch of, like, original games, like, on your, like, Xbox or PlayStation. Because, like, most of that stuff, like, if you've got, like, PlayStation Plus or Xbox Live, there's a version of it that you can download. So what's the point of buying a whole new system when you could probably already play it on your, you know, current system? With, like, the NES Classic, the N64 Classic, those games haven't really been available except for, like, maybe on your computer as a, you know, a downloadable emulator. But yeah, the, you know, PlayStation, like, hell, the controller pretty much hasn't changed from, like, PlayStation 1. They may add a couple extra buttons, but that's about it. So it's
joysticks.
Yeah, it's not like the you know, going and playing, like, you know, the old 2-button NES controller. It's Yeah, it's not that much different.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see if they sell any of these.
Oh, I'm sure they will. I mean, there's a lot of people. I mean, it's just kind of crazy to me. I mean, I remember the hype surrounding PlayStation, you know, when it was first coming out and everything. And, you know, now it's a classic. Like, great. Now I do feel old.
Exactly. Oh.
Like, yeah. Like, you know, you're getting old when the disc consoles are getting called classic instead of cartridges.
Oh yeah, that hurts.
All righty, any other tidbits or anything you got?
That's all I can think of. So check us out on cigarnerdpodcast.com. We're also on the ESO network at esopodcast.com. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter at cigarnerdpod. You know, check us out, leave us a rating, leave us a comment, whatever. Get your shirts at realmensmokecigars.com. Get your energy drink at strikeforceenergy.com. Promo code CIGARNERDS for 20% off your order. And happy Halloween, Michael. And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We're your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.